I think one of the Rosh Yeshivas used to say that the biggest miracle was that the boys came back after vacation. I guess a miracle here also. Okay, we are in the beginning of the time between Pesach and Shavuos with the counting of the Omer. And the Omer is a preparation for Shavuos and ties the holiday of Pesach with the holiday of Shavuos, because those two holidays really go together. On Pesach we got our physical freedom, and on Shavuos that physical freedom got direction with the giving of the Torah, and then we became spiritually free. So the culmination of Pesach, in fact, according to some, the four expressions of Geula, the four Lashonos of Geula, are V'hoseisi, V'hitzalti, V'go'alti, V'lokachti, Hashem li la'am. And that last one, I will take you as my nation, was not achieved until the Torah was given. So the real Geula, the finishing of Geula, was the giving of the Torah. So therefore the holiday of Pesach and the holiday of Shavuos are connected. And the Ramban says that the period of counting the Omer is like a Chol HaMoed. It's a long Chol HaMoed. It's like Sukkot. Sukkot, there's 7 days. And the eighth day is an Atzeres. The rabbis call Shavuos Atzeres because it's like the eighth day of Pesach. And they say that really on Sukkot it also should be 49 days later. Just 7 weeks, and then the eighth day should be on the 50th day. But since it's the winter, the Rambam Shom didn't want people to have to trudge through the snow or whatever in the mud to come back to the Beis HaMikdash 7 weeks later. But on Pesach, it's a summer, and therefore the culmination of Pesach is on Shavuos. And the period of counting the Omer prepares for Shavuos, prepares basically for the giving of the Torah. So I want to speak a little bit about how that preparation takes place, what he's supposed to do. Just how, by counting the days, how does that prepare you for the giving of the Torah? So the first idea is a more general idea, and then we'll get to more specific ways of actualizing this general concept, is what the Sefer HaChinuch says. The Sefer HaChinuch says that when a person is looking forward to a very important occasion, he counts the days. Count the days towards important occasions. So after we celebrate our physical freedom on the first day of Pesach, we begin to count towards the more important occasion that is, like we said, the culmination of that freedom and the actual realization of that freedom, the Yontif of Shavuos. And the idea being that in order to be able to acquire something and to really appreciate something, you have to anticipate it, you have to have a she'ifa, an aspiration towards getting it. And therefore, by counting the days, we show that aspiration. We're looking forward. We're anticipating. We're aspiring towards the giving of the Torah. If you don't aspire towards something, then you'll never be able to acquire it, or really acquire it. There's a medrash that the Michtam Eliyahu brings down. Since we're mourning for the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, it mentions the students of Rabbi Akiva in a little bit different context. It says, Rabbi Akiva hayadoresh, Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha, ubikshu atalmidim lanamne, and the students began to fall asleep. They began to drimu. And bikesh la'orra, Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake them up. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years, right? So the students were going to sleep, and Rabbi Akiva was giving his shir. So Rabbi Akiva said to them, in order to wake them up, he said the following, Maroso Esther, what did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 provinces? Tavo Esther, Basbita Shosara, שחוי שמאה ועשרים ושבע שונים ותמלוך על מאה ועשרים ושבע מדינות. Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sora, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 provinces. So they all woke up. What in the world is there a connection between Sora's 127 years and Esther's 127 provinces, except for the fact that they're the same number? And Rabbi Akiva went on. Over the next few shiurim, we'll give other interpretations of this chazal, especially in light of what happened to the students of Rabbi Akiva and why it happened and what we're supposed to learn from it. But for now, I want to tell you what the Michta Meliyahu says, with a little, maybe a little bit addition of my own. What he says is the following. He says, Rabbi Akiva surmised that his students were not paying attention because he was speaking about ideas that were way beyond them, that were way beyond their level. And they reasoned that why should we listen to this? Why should we listen to things that are beyond our level? Let's get a good rest now. And when Rabbi Akiva comes down to our level, we'll be well rested and be able to hear what he's saying much, much more effectively, because we'll be well rested. So Rabbi Akiva told them, you're making a big mistake. You know how Esther reached the level of being a queen and ruling over 127 provinces? Because her whole life she aspired to be like Sarah, who lived 127 years, meaning the following. Chazal say that Sarah did not just live 127 years. That 127 years happened to pass over her. But kulam shovim letova, all of Sarah's 127 years were equally for the good. Now that can't be taken literally, that they equally were good, because they weren't equally good. The 90 years she didn't have children were not equally good with the 37 years she had Yitzchak. The night she was dragged to Paro or dragged to Avimelech was not equally good with the day they celebrated Yitzchak's bris. So all her days were not equally good, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't say they were equally good. It says they equally were for the good. Meaning, whatever came to Sarah, you can't control the situations that come to you in life, but you can control in how you deal with them, in how you relate to them. That you can control, right? You may not control what happens to your hand, to your tooth, or whatever, but you end up coming to the shir anyway. That shows that you're in control, and not the situations in life that you can't control. So that is what's called malchus. That is real royalty. Royalty is not how many people you can rule over, but it's how much you are a ruler over yourself and in control of yourself. Because people can be in charge of many, many people and be slaves. And they can be in charge of no one and be royal. The Shurei Das brings down a medrash, says that when Yosef and Yehuda were arguing over Binyamin, what's going to happen to Binyamin, so the Shvatim said, Malachim medainim zeh zeh, kings are fighting, we're not going to get involved. So he said, I understand Yosef was a king, he was a second in charge in Egypt, but who was Yehuda king over? Nine brothers? What in the world, he called him a king? Because he was the head of a clan, the head of nine brothers, that's a king? He says, yeah, royalty doesn't depend how many people you rule over. You can rule over millions and be a slave. And he gives the example, the last czar, Nikolai, I think he was, Tsar Nikolai, yeah, or Alexander, whatever, the last czar of Russia, was assassinated in the end. And he, what's it called, he was afraid of being assassinated. And to the point where for years before his assassination, he never slept more than 15 minutes at night in any room. Every 15 minutes they'd wake him up and move him to a different room in this gigantic castle that he had, so the assassins couldn't find him. That's a king. He ruled over millions of people. He was a slave. Slave to the people. That's not a person with royalty. That's not a person who's in charge. And a person can rule no one, but if he's in charge of himself, If he rules over himself, he has self-control, then he's a ruler. So Sara Imenu was the quintessent ruler. She exhibited malchus. She was able to control every second of her life, not to control what happened to her, but to control how she related to it. That is royalty. That's malchus. Esther aspired her whole life to have that quality of royalty that Sara had. She never reached that level. But because she aspired towards the highest level, at least she reached the level that she had to rule over 127 Medinos. If you don't aspire towards the highest goals, you accomplish nothing, you achieve nothing. You can only bring out your potential if you aspire towards higher and higher things. And that's what Rabbi Akiva told his students. You're making a big mistake by thinking that if you don't listen to the high levels that I'm talking about, you're not missing anything. That if I'm giving you something to aspire to, something to look up to, and that will give you the ability to reach your potential. But if you don't have high dreams and aspirations, then you're never going to achieve anything. So that is the first idea of the Sfira, counting the days anxiously, anticipating the giving of the Torah. So you're aspiring towards the receiving of the Torah. If you aspire, then you'll be able to accomplish something. If you don't aspire for it, it just comes upon you, you're not going to be able to really access it and effectively acquire it. My Rosh Yeshiva, the Gifter Zatzal, used to say there's a few Gemaras that have the same style, and you can ask the same question on all of them and give the same answer. For instance, the Gemara says, HaRotze LaHachkim Yadrin. Person who wants to be a Chacham should daven facing a little bit towards the south. Because the menorah in the Beis Hamikdash, in the Mishkan, was in the south. And the menorah is a symbol of wisdom. So the south is related to wisdom. So if you daven a little bit facing towards the south, towards the Mokom HaMikdash, but a little towards the south, it's a skula for getting wise. Or another Gemara. The Gemara says, "Man de boy le mehevi chassid." A person who wants to be a chassid should learn the laws of brachos, pirkei avos, and the laws of damages. So Rav Shiva asked, the Gemara doesn't waste a letter, let alone a word. Why didn't it just say simply, "Hayadrim yachkin"? If you daven to the south, you'll be wise. If you learn these three things, you'll be a chassid. Why do you have to start with whoever wants to be wise? Do this. Just tell me, if you do this, you'll be wise. He said, because if you do it 1,000 times a day, but you don't want to be wise, you'll never be wise. If you don't want to be a chassid, you can do all the right things, you'll never become a chassid. Everything starts with a desire, with an aspiration, wanting to do it. If you don't want, you'll never achieve anything. People have to have goals, they have to have aspirations, they have to have dreams. If you don't have that desire, that aspiration, then you'll never achieve anything. So therefore, we count anxiously, anticipating and aspiring towards the giving of the Torah, so that when we re-receive the Torah every year, in our yearly re-acceptance of the Torah on Shavuos, it'll make an impression on us. Okay, so that is the first general idea. But if that would be the only idea, then it would be more proper to count down than count up. Right? When you're looking forward to something, I remember around this time of year when my children were little, probably hasn't changed since then, along with counting the Omer, they were having another count, the Gomer, finishing of school. And they would count the Omer and they would count the Gomer, how many more days till school is over. And the two counts were different. The Omer they counted up, and the Gomer they counted down. 10 days to go, 9, 8, 7, like a you send a rocket to space, you count down. That's normally how people count towards a very important, right, the chos and the kala, counting towards their wedding. They count down, how many more days left till the wedding. So why do we count the Omer up? We should count the Omer down. 49 days, 48 days to go until we get to Shavuos, one more day, and now it's it, we reach the goal. Why do we count up and not down? So the Sefer HaChinuch gives a very simple answer. He says, because we don't want to get frustrated. If you say in the beginning, 49 days to go, it's such a long time. You say today's one day. No, okay, one day I can handle. And he says, the only thing is, then when you get to 25, right, so the numbers up are bigger than the numbers down. Then you should switch to 24, 23, 22. He says, once you started going up, you keep it, what's it called, the same, you don't change in the middle. Okay, that's a simple idea. But others say that when you count down, so the only thing you have is the anticipation. You want, you're anticipating, but there's more to reaching a goal than just anticipating it. There has to be also positive steps taken to acquire that goal with the anticipation. Just anticipating alone is not enough. Famous story, which I've said here before, but I'll say it again. The man who wanted to become a millionaire, and he realized that according to all natural means, if he'd worked for the next 500 years and save every penny, he wouldn't be a millionaire. The only way, naturally, he could become a millionaire is if he won the lottery. So he wanted so much to be a millionaire that every day after Shmona Esrei, in his Elokai Netzor, he would beseech the Ribbono Shel Olam with tears for about 15 minutes, begging, please God, let me win the lottery. And I promise you, if I win the lottery and I become a millionaire, half of the money right away goes to tzedakah. The other half I will use only for good things. And he cried and begged 20 years, three times a day at the end of his Shmona Esrei, please God, let me win the lottery. Finally, after 20 years, the angels came to God and they said, we can't take this anymore. Every day we got to listen to this guy beg and cry, right? Please let me win the lottery. Please let me win the lottery. You know, he sounds sincere. What would be so terrible, God, if you let him win the lottery? God said, I'd love him to win the lottery. He never bought a ticket. You can want and want, but if you don't buy the ticket, you're not going to win the lottery. So along with a tremendous desire to get the Torah, you have to also do things to be able to get it, to be able to acquire it. So therefore, if you count down, all you have is, I have that goal, and I can't wait to get there. But I'm not doing anything now. I'm just getting rid of the days till that day comes. But if you count up, that means that every day counts. It's not enough to count the days. You have to make every day count. And every day, I say, today is one day in the Omer. What am I going to do today that will bring me a little bit closer to my goal? You have to have long-range goals and short-range goals, right? I have a long-range goal. I want to receive the Torah. But I want to be able to realize that aspiration. So what am I going to do today that's going to get me a little bit closer, like a ladder? You don't stand on the floor and look up at the top of the ladder and say, oh, I wish I was on top of the ladder. You're never going to get there. What do? Climb one rung at a time. Today I'll climb one rung, and tomorrow another rung, and the third day a third rung, and eventually I will get closer or actually achieve my aspiration, my goals. So you have to have long-range goals, way beyond where you are, and short-range goals of what am I going to do today to get a little bit closer to that. That's what we count the Omer every day. The long-range goal is, I want to receive the Torah. I have this tremendous anticipation. But today's one day, one rung on the ladder. What am I going to do today that's going to bring me a little bit closer? There's a medrash, I think, that reflects this maisa with the lottery. The medrash says, Chalomoseim shel tzadikim heim bashamayim v'heim ba'aretz. The dreams of tzaddikim are both in heaven and in earth. Where do we see that? Yaakov Avinu dreamt that he was a ladder, was firmly planted on the ground, and its head was in the heavens. So he dreamt heaven and earth. Shalom Hoseim, Shal Rishoyim, Lo Bashamayim, Lo Baaretz. Rishoyim, when they dream, it's not in the heavens, not in the earth. Paro dreamt he was standing on the water. Wasn't in the heavens, wasn't on the earth, it was on the water. What's it mean? A tzaddik has the loftiest dreams. He dreams in the heavens. But he also puts a ladder firmly on the ground to reach his goal, one rung at a time. A Rasha has no lofty aspirations. He has no program how to reach them. Everything is wishy-washy on the water. So his dreams are unfounded. Masha Einkein, a tzaddik's dreams are lofty and well-founded, well-grounded also, that you have a program how you're going to reach your aspirations. So that is, and then also we count not only the days, but we count the weeks also. And it's interesting. I didn't see anybody who asked this question. I think it's a great question. I have a few answers to it. But what's for tonight, I'll tell you the question and one answer that fits what we're talking about. When we count the days, we count the day at the beginning of the day. Yesterday we counted 7 days at the beginning of the day, which means this is going to be 7 days. Okay? We didn't count now that it was 7 days. But we counted last night 1 week. That's the end of the week, not the beginning of the week. Why do we count the day at the beginning of the day and the week at the end of the week? Either we should count on the first day. Today is one day, which will be 1 week in the Omer. Just like it's going to be one day, this is the beginning of 1 week. It's the beginning of 1 day. Why, when we count days, we count at the beginning of the day? We count weeks, we count at the end of the week, the last day of the week. So it's thinking that this also follows the pattern of how a person has to address reaching goals. Like we said, you have to have short-range goals, long-range goals. You also have to have something else. You have to appreciate what you already accomplished. You can't just be looking at where you're not and aspiring, because then it leads to being very frustrating if you don't realize that you've accomplished something. So therefore, when you're climbing a ladder, so you want to get to the 50th rung, but you're only now on the 7th rung. So if you're only looking up, you have so many rungs to go, you could give up. So what do you have to do? Every once in a while, look back and see how much you've accomplished. Okay, you're not where you'd like to be, but you're a lot better than you were a week ago. You're 7 more rungs higher. You're a little bit closer. And that, the Vilna Gaon says, is the meaning of the following pasuk. Pasuk says, Leiv chacham liyamino, leiv chsil lishmolo. A chacham's heart is to the right, and a fool's heart's to the left. He says what it means is the following. When you're learning a sefer in Hebrew, what you've learned already is to your right. What you've yet to learn is to your left. A foolish person only looks at what he hasn't learned. There's so much to learn, he gives up, closes the book, forget it. A wise person wants to learn as much as he can, but every once in a while he looks to the right to see what he's accomplished, and that gives him the incentive to go on. You can't only look at where you're not. You have to also appreciate where you are. There's an idea of not being nistapik b'muad. When it comes to spiritual things, not be satisfied with a minimum. You have to want the maximum. But you can be sameach b'chelko, you can be happy with what you have. There's no contradiction between being happy with what you have, but not satisfied with it when it comes to spiritual things. I want more, but I'm happy for the time being with what I have, and I will now work to get more. But at least it gives me the incentive to go on when I realize I've accomplished something. And I'm happy with what I've accomplished, but I'm not satisfied with it. That's the difference. So therefore, we count the days at the beginning of the day. What am I going to do today that's going to bring me a little bit closer to my goal? At the end of the week, we look back and we say, okay, I'm not yet where I want to be. I want to be at day 50. But the Maisha, I'm 7 days closer to that than I was last week. So I have to appreciate and be happy with what I've accomplished, and then that gives me the incentive to go on, not to be satisfied with it, to go on to accomplish more. Okay, so now we've established that the purpose of Sfiras HaOmer is one, to give you an aspiration to want to get to the Torah, at the same time to give you the ability to work on achieving that aspiration little by little, right? Rung by rung. So how do you do that? What are you supposed to do every day that will help you to enable you that after 50 days to finally really receive the Torah. So one idea is that the Jewish people were on the 49th level of tumah, of defilement, negative 49. And in order to get the Torah, they had to get to the 49th level of tahara, the 49th level of purity and kedusha. So they needed 49 days to be able to go from 49 levels of tumah to 49 levels of kedusha. Now they ask, lechora, that's not true. Because if you're at minus 49, you have to get to plus 49, you need 98 days. So they say that it's not a question of minus 49 and plus 49, but it's like parallel ladders. The same ladder that goes up towards the negative side goes up towards the positive side, and they branch they branch off. And therefore, every level that you get away from defilement, you get a little bit closer to tahara. So it's only 49 levels. The same day that you go one level up tahara, you go a level away from tumah. They work together. Therefore, the higher you are the tahara, the more you could be betumah. The greater a person, the greater they could fall. Right? They say that people who live in basements don't usually commit suicide. It's hard to jump out of a basement window. But people who live at the top of the World Trade Center, I think we can use that analogy again. It used to be the Empire State Building for a while. But in any case, if you live on top of the World Trade Center, right, then it's pretty dangerous to jump off. So the higher you go in holiness, the more dangerous it is to fall parallel to a higher level of tumah. So in any case, therefore, that's one way for preparing for Torah. Torah is the ultimate purity. And Torah cannot exist simultaneously with tumah. If a person is tameh, right now we're not talking about tameh now, the kind of tumah that a person doesn't cause on himself. We're talking about the tumah of averus, of evil, or whatever. The Torah is not compatible with that. So the more a person purifies himself, right, the more he is able to be a receptacle to Torah. The more he is not pure and holy, the more unholy he is, so the less he can be a receptacle to Torah. So if you want to be able to receive the Torah, and the Torah should become part of you, right, so you have to be a more holy person, which brings us to this week's Sedra. Torah tells us, Kedoshim tiyu, be holy people. Ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeinu, because I, your God, am holy, and if you want to be like me, you have to be holy. Now what does that mean, to be holy like God? So many people think holiness is separating yourself from physical things and being involved only in spiritual things. That's holiness. That's a non-Jewish concept of holiness. Christian concept of holiness is separating yourself from the physical world. Become a nun, don't get married, a monk, don't talk too much, don't have any material possessions, lock yourself up in a monastery, right, in a convent, and don't wear nice clothing, and don't eat too much or whatever. And the more that you separate yourself from the physical pleasures of the world, the holier you are. That's a holy person. Judaism is not like that. In Judaism, all of our mitzvahs are physical things. Eating, drinking, having children, getting married is a mitzvah. So the idea of Kedusha, my Rosh Hashiva used to point out, God is involved with every physical thing in this world because it exists because he wants it to exist. And if God would take away his connection to anything, it wouldn't exist anymore. So God is involved with every physical thing in the world, yet it doesn't affect him. He doesn't pull him down to be materialistic. Just the opposite. He raises it up and he gives it its ability to exist. That's holiness. Holiness is having a connection with every physical thing, but not using it to drag yourself down into materialism, but to elevate it towards a higher purpose. And that's what the Torah says, Kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. You be holy like me. Don't separate yourself from the physical world. be involved with the physical world, but you affect it instead of it affecting you. It shouldn't drag you down to be like an animal. You should raise it up like an angel. And that is why right after that pasuk, Kedoshim Tiyu, is the mitzvah, two mitzvahs that go together. Ish imovi oviv tiro, person should respect his mother and father, v'shabsosai tishmoru, and keep my Shabbos. Those two things represent the epitome, the essence of Kedusha. How so? Honoring a parent, many people think, is because parents did a lot of good things for you. You have to show gratitude for all the things. They raised you, they fed you, they clothed you, they gave you a place to live, they educated you. So you owe them a debt of gratitude. But that's really not the case. Because the Torah says, where was this mitzvah originated? In the desert. Kasher tzivcha Hashem lokecha. Honor your parents like God commanded you. Where did he command you? In Mara, in the desert. The Mepharshim point out, in the desert, the children didn't need their parents for any of these things. The parents didn't feed their children, they got mom. The parents didn't clothe their children, the clothing grew with them. The parents did not give them housing, because everybody had the Anoni Akavo, the clouds of glory, and the sukkahs that they lived in. They need their parents. The parents didn't educate them, because they all learned directly from the horse's mouth, from Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? They heard it directly. They didn't need parents to educate them. They got it from the first floor. Not only that, but the parents, not only didn't they benefit their children in that generation, they harmed their children. Because of their sins, the children had to be in the desert for 40 years. So here are parents that didn't benefit their children and harmed them, and still, that's what the Torah said, honor your parents. Respect your parents. Why? Because even if your parents gave you nothing, they gave you the most important thing you have in life. Life. They brought you into this world. They gave you your life. If you appreciate life, then you appreciate your parents. And that's why the reward for honoring a parent is long life. Because if you appreciate life, you get more of it. You don't appreciate it, why should God give you more of something you don't appreciate? So appreciating a parent is appreciating life. Now what does that mean? It's that they gave you life in this physical world. That means that honoring and respecting a parent properly is appreciating life in this world. This world is a very important place. Why? Because it gives a person pleasure here, or because it's an opportunity to be used to create the world to come? That's the second part. Shabbos reminds me there's a world to come. And this world is the place where you earn and create that world to come. So this world is very important. Because if you don't have this world, you can't get to the world to come. This is the place where you make it, where you earn it, where you create it. So you need both of those things. And that's what holiness is. Holiness is utilizing everything in this world, not as an animal, just to satisfy your more base desires, but to utilize it in creating and using it for a more elevated and eternal purpose. That's what Kedusha is. The Jewish idea of Kedusha is not running away from the world and separating yourself from the world, but utilizing the world and using it for a higher purpose than just to fill your stomach and to satisfy your desires. That's the idea of the Kedusha. So during the 49 days between Pesach and Shavuos, the first thing we work on to be able to achieve our aspiration of receiving the Torah is to work on our Tahara and Kedusha, to purify ourselves, to make ourselves more holy, to work on those 49 levels of Tahara, the 49 levels of purity that a person has to acquire to be able to be a receptacle for Torah. That's the first idea. Second idea in the 49 days, it says that there are seven characteristics that God exhibits. Chesed, Gevura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malchus. Those are the seven attributes that God exhibits in the creation and the running of the world. The initial creation was chesed, God did an act of kindness to create the world, to give to the world, and then gevura, strength of discipline, of making that chesed have boundaries, because if it's unbounded, then it's not really kindness. And then tiferes is a synthesis of the two, and netzach is what makes it eternal, and hod is what makes it, gives it beauty, and yisrod is the foundation of it all, and malchus is the royalty, the kingdom that comes at the end. Each of those seven has seven parts to it. There's chesed of chesed, there's gevura in chesed, there's tiferes in chesed, and so on. Altogether 49. So every day we work on a different midah, a different attribute, that we, our midos, our character should be similar to God. Right? A person has to develop a character that emulates God's, a mitzvah, a halakta v'drach, of walk in his ways. He's merciful, you be merciful. He's kind, you be kind. And so on. God shows strength, you be strong. Strong meaning discipline. Discipline yourself. So we work on our midos, on our character. Because derech eretz kodma l'tov. Because midos tovos have to precede the Torah. The Torah was given to human beings, not to animals. And only a person who works on his midos, who's in control of his various character attributes, and he's a person who's in control of his character traits, is a real human being. Because animals can also be trained to act nicely, but they're not in control. They can't work on their midos to change their instincts. They can be trained to train to act nice, to behave nicely, but you don't change the animal's instincts. Famous Maisa with the Rambam. The Rambam had a argument with a philosopher. The philosopher said you can train an animal to go against its instincts. And the Rambam said you can't. So the philosopher said, I'll prove to you you can't. Give me 10 cats, I'll train them to go against their instincts. So he invites the Rambam to a banquet, and he rings a bell, and all these cats come out of the kitchen dressed as waiters and waitresses, balancing a tray in one hand and a towel over the other hand, and standing upright on their two back legs. So the philosopher says, I trained these cats to go against their instincts. They're standing on two legs and serving the trays, balancing them. Rama says, okay, nice, but let's see what happens. Towards the end of the meal, the philosopher rings his bell again. The cats come out to serve dessert. And the Rambam takes a little wooden box that he had with him, puts it on the floor, and opens it up. And within moments, there's pandemonium in the hall, because the cats are down on all four chasing the mice that the Rambam let loose. The Rambam says, you can train a cat to think he's a waiter as much as you want, but let the first mouse go by, and he remembers that he's a cat. On the other hand, a human being is not like that. A human being, an animal, is called behema. Ba-ma, whatever it is. You can't change it. It's born ashore, it dies ashore, it doesn't change. Adam is in gematria ma. What? Right? A human being, you always have to ask what he is and where he is, because he can change. A human being can change his instincts and be in control completely. And therefore, only a person who's worked on his character and is in total control of his character is a real human being. Otherwise, he's like a trained cat. An animal can be trained too. But if he's not in control, and the first mouse goes by and he goes down on all four, then he's, what's it called, not really a human being. Simcha Zissel from Keller said that Darwin proposed the theory of evolution, that human beings evolved from apes, because he never saw a real human being. So he imagined that the animals he saw around him who were walking on two legs came from other animals that came from two legs and four legs and so on. If he ever saw a real human being like my Rebbe, Rebbe Shlomo Salanter, he never would have made the theory. So on the surface, it sounds cute, but it doesn't sound authentic. because it would seem to imply that Darwin was some kind of subhuman whose friends were also, you know, beer guzzlers who swung from trees or whatever and wore loincloths, and they never saw a real human being. But Darwin and his circle of friends were very respectable, refined people. So how could Reb Simcha Zissel say he never saw a real human being? But he meant this idea. He saw very, very refined people in behavior. But they never worked on their characters where they were in total control. And each one had a mouse that could bring him down on all four. Mice come in all sizes and shapes and all forms. For one person it's money, for another person it's other things. So they're like trained cats. A cat you could also train to act properly, but it's not in control. It can't go against its instincts. A person can go against his instincts if he works on himself. If you don't work on yourself, then you're like a trained cat. Until the mice goes by, you can be perfectly behavior, and when the first mouse goes by, you lose it. So that's what he meant. My Rebbe, Rebbe Yisrael Salanter, there was no mouse in the world in any shape or form that could bring him down on all fours. He was in total control of his character. That's a real human being. And therefore it's impossible to think that a human being like this came from an animal who's a different type completely, who can't control their instincts. But Darwin saw people who also basically were prey to their instincts. So they were more refined, and this is less refined. More refined can come from less refined, but one type can come from another type. That was what he meant. So, and that's why the Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Derech Eretz, im ein Derech Eretz, ein Torah. Lo yishko na Torah la olam b'misha ein bo midos tovos." The Torah, normally it's translated, the Torah can never exist by somebody who doesn't have good midos. But the way we're saying it means something different. The Torah can exist by people who don't have good midos. Unfortunately, we know people who don't have good midos and they know the Torah. And the usual answer to that is, imagine what they'd be like without Torah. But that's not such a good answer. But what it means is, the Torah can't remain forever with somebody who doesn't have midos tovos. It can remain up until the first mouse goes by. Once the first mouse goes by, it's finished. But if you've worked on your character and you're in control, then Taka, the Torah can remain forever with you. So if you want to acquire the Torah and make it a kinyan, make it something that you possess, then you have to have derech eretz, you have to have midos tovos. So therefore, part of the avoda of Sfiras HaOmer in preparing and anticipating acquiring the Torah is working on your midos, working on your character. How do you know what kind of character to acquire? You have to emulate God. So every week is a different midah. One week is working on your chesed and working on your discipline and working on the synthesis of both of them, tiferes and so on. Until you've worked on all your character traits as much as a person can. Some people more, some people less, whatever. But at least you've accomplished something, and you're able to acquire the Torah according to how much derech eretz you have. That's how much Torah you can acquire. Okay, it's not all or nothing. And that is what's called second idea. So we have two ideas. One is working on kedusha, holiness and purity, the 49 levels of tahara. The other one is working on the 49 character traits that help you emulate God and work on controlling and refining your character. And then there are 48 acts of acquisition that the Torah is acquired with. 48. So it says every day you work on a different act of acquisition, a kinyan for Torah. And the 49th day you review all of them and work on all of them together. These 48 kinyanim are split basically into three parts, and they represent what we spoke about. The first part, they're not necessarily this order, but the first part is the technicality of how to learn. You have to learn by listening, by reviewing, by getting a Rebbe to teach you, there are the mechanics of actual learning. Those are part of the acquisition, the acts of acquisition of acquiring the Torah. Then there are things that help you become more of a holy person. So those things are also acquisitions of Torah, because like we said, Torah is emanates from God, who is holy. It only goes to holy and pure places. So if you're not holy and pure, you're not going to be able to acquire. You'll be able to know Torah, but you won't be able to make it part of you, because it's not compatible with what you are. Torah is compatible with holiness and purity, not with impurity and unholiness. And the third thing is how to get along with other people. Because Torah is not something that's for the individual. Torah was given to be the acquisition of Klal Yisrael. No one person can have the whole Torah. The whole Torah is only because we're all united and everybody has their portion in the Torah. When it comes to mitzvahs, it's for sure like that. I have mitzvahs that you don't have. You have mitzvahs I don't have. Somebody's a farmer, he has mitzvahs that a person who's a city dweller doesn't have. On the other hand, the city dweller has mitzvahs that the farmer doesn't have. Men have mitzvahs that women don't have. Right? There are many mitzvahs that apply only to men that no woman could ever do. And women have mitzvahs that no man could ever do. At least in my lifetime, I'm hoping that no man will ever bring the sacrifice after childbirth. Right? That's a woman's mitzvah, not a man's mitzvah. Not a mitzvah a man could ever do. So a Kohen has mitzvahs that a regular Jew doesn't have, and a regular Jew has mitzvahs that a Kohen doesn't have. A Kohen can never fulfill the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen as a father, because he's exempt from it. It's only a non-Kohen could have a Pidyon HaBen for his child. So unless you're a Kohen, Levi, Israel, man and woman wrapped into one, you can't have 613 mitzvahs. And even though today that may be possible, but under normal circumstances that was not. So how do we have 613 mitzvahs? Nobody has 613 mitzvahs. The answer is we didn't receive the Torah as individuals. We received the Torah as a conglomerate called Yisrael. And the Jewish people as a people have 613 mitzvahs. And each person has his portion, his share. Each person is like a limb, an organ of that body called Klal Yisrael. And that's how we receive the Torah. The Torah can only be received by Klal Yisrael. It can't be received by individuals. And that's why until the Jewish people were a certain number, that we didn't get the Torah. Avraham Avinu didn't get the Torah, and Yitzchak and Yaakov, when the Jewish people were 600,000, those are the root souls of the Jewish people. That is the complete makeup of the Jewish people. And then there are sub-souls. Those are the root souls. Then there's like clusters. So a lot of people can be in one cluster, but there's 600,000 clusters of souls, different clusters, and until there were 600,000, we couldn't get the Torah. That's why the Torah was given dafka to the Klal Yisrael, not to individuals, not even to the Avos, not. And the Torah is meant to not only to be learned, but to be taught to others, and to inspire others. And the Gemara says that somebody who learns Torah with no intention of sharing it with anyone else is Dvar Hashem Baza, he's insulting the Torah. And he loses a share of the world to come. That doesn't mean you have to be a teacher or a Rebbe. It means that you have to be willing to share the Torah you learn with somebody, with your family, with your neighbors, with your children, your parents, somebody. Right, that you have the ability to share that Torah with. That's the Torah was given. Torah was not given to be the, I think the Klausenberger Rebbe says on the Mishnah in Perkei Avos, Im lamadata Torah harbe, if you learned a lot of Torah, al tavzik tov aliyah, don't hold the good for yourself. So usually it means don't take credit. But he learned it means don't hold that good of Torah for yourself. Ki lekach, you were created to share it with others. So therefore, a person has to work on his midos and derech eretz, not only to perfect his character, to be the kind of person who's a human being who can get the Torah. but to work on those things that there's two sources for good character, for having good character traits. One is, like we said, emulating God. The other is v'yahavta re'acha kamocha, which is in this week's sentence. Love your neighbor as yourself. Get along with other people. Right? Do for them what you would want them to do for you. Don't do to them what you wouldn't want them to do to you. So there has to be a way that people can coexist. That's also part of it. It's not just you have to be like God, but you have to be able to get along with people too. Because the Torah was meant for a society, not for individuals. And if you don't know how to get along with other people, there can't be a society. So that's what Rabbi Akiva said. V'yahavta re'acha kamocha, that's the whole Torah. The whole Torah is v'yahavta re'acha kamocha, work on your character. That way you'll be like God and you'll be able to get along with other people. That's what the Torah is all about. Torah was to bring shalom to the world. Shalom means perfection. It also means peace and harmony between people. That's the purpose of the Torah. To bring harmony and to make you more godlike. So a person has to work on his midos, work on his character for two reasons. One, to be more holy and more godlike, and the other one is to be able to get along with other people so he can get the Torah, because if you are an individual, you can't get the Torah. So it comes out, those are the ways of preparing for receiving the Torah. In general, counting the Omer is to aspire towards the Torah. But we count up and not down in order to show that in the aspiration, you have to do something to realize that aspiration. And part of that is to work on purifying yourself and becoming a more holy person, a person who uses this world for higher purposes than to fulfill his desires. You have to work on your character during these 49 days, both to be more godlike and to be someone who can receive the Torah and hold on to it. Because if you're not in control of your character, you're like a trained animal, and you're not going to be able to hold on to the Torah. And also to be able to get along with other people, because if you can't get along with other people, you can never have the whole Torah, because no one can get the whole Torah himself. It's only a joint team effort from all people working together. And in order, therefore, to really acquire the Torah, you need 48 days, because there are 40 different acts of acquisition, 40 different things that help a person acquire the Torah, and those 48 things are split into three parts. Things that make you more holy and pure, things that are the technical things of being able to actually learn the Torah, and things that make you able to get along with other people. Those are the things that enable you to eventually re-receive the Torah on Shavuos in our yearly re-acceptance and re-receiving of the Torah.